I'm a really big fan of the news show Marketplace, so I've always wanted to say this. Let's do the numbers. Women are, as many of us know, over half the population. An estimated 40% of all living composers are women. Approximately 17% of the composers on publishers' lists are female-identifying. Less than 3% of orchestra concerts in the 2019-2020 season, as planned, included a work by a woman. Half the pieces planned were written by dead white men. Exactly one woman has, on her own, won an Oscar for Best Original Score. Hildur Guðnadóttir won in 2020. We're still celebrating firsts for women in classical music. Right now, a first. That's one. What are these ensembles and films and publishers missing out on? A rich set of life experiences, personalities as diverse as you can imagine, the joy and awe and shock of a new experience. And there's so much out there. I'm Colleen Phelps, and this is Classically Speaking. So, giant equity issues plus unprecedented pandemic time. Nashville's Chamber Orchestra Intersection came up with a way to handle both, shining a spotlight on a lot of female-identifying composers and safely hiring their performers all at once. Here's artistic director and friend of the podcast, Kelly Corcoran.
So the Listen Project is a two-year project that Intersection is doing, where we are commissioning 25 works from female-identifying composers. They are all five-minute pieces, so short works. And each composer is partnered with one of our musicians, and they work collaboratively on thinking about the work and the focus of it. You know, writing new works that hopefully will have a life and live well beyond the scope of this project. So it's just exciting to be creating 25 brand new compositions.
This viola piece is called Wallflowers. Composer Christina Spinet wrote it as part of the project. I think when you're making a commission, finding one good composer who's the right fit for the project is an accomplishment, and you had to recruit 25. How did you go about doing that?
It is a mix of some composers that we already had a relationship with, like Nakeru Okoye. We had just recently performed some of her work, but we also did reach out to our players and see, you know, who would they like to work with? Who were the composers on their list? So that was really fun. Many performers came forward with a long list of many great, wonderful composers. Some composers would recommend their colleagues, hey, you should check out this composer too. And so it really just grew from the relationships we had, the input of our musicians, and then even just reaching out to other colleagues in the field, for example, the Luna Lab, who works with young female-identifying composers. So by partnering with them, we have six of their fellows who will be writing for the project. Some of the composers are Nashville-based, but some of them are from all over the world. This reimagining of how we connect with audiences is a really positive thing, because I think that while it's been challenging and really difficult, it has allowed us to see new opportunities.
Kelly Corcoran built this posse of 25 by reaching out to the 40 female-identifying composers who were connected to the ensemble and its members. Yes, 40. The women are out there. Let's hear from five of the composers who became involved. They represent a variety of ages, ethnicities, career paths, and life experiences. And you'll hear that not only in their words, but also in their music. Marty Epstein is a composer who teaches at the Boston Conservatory and at the Berklee School of Music.
I live in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I've lived here for a long time, and I'm originally from Omaha, Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
I write for all different instruments and voices and combinations. And I would say that my main focus is writing music that changes and plays with the listener's perception of time. So often my music is very long and spacious, but I'm trying to change how you perceive the time passing. I would say that my music is spacious, melancholy, and mysterious.
Inti Figgis Viswetha is based in New York.
I write sometimes, I curate sometimes, I mostly compose freelance, and I'm originally from Washington, D.C. I think I write flexible music that tries to bring the character of whatever ensemble I have the privilege of working with to the foreground. So focusing on their history, their repertoire, what they've done before, and then try and build something new out of it. Haunting, serrated, and turbulent.
Ileana Velasquez lives in upstate New York and teaches at Williams College in Massachusetts.
I was born in Cuba and raised in Cuba and go to the States when I was around 28 years old. So I'm still very much Cuban, now Cuban American. I had to say that because that's a big part of me. A bit of all my experience in life and where I grew up, obviously. I don't write folk music. I don't like music that is groovy Cuban either. But if one would listen to it and if one is knowledgeable of what Cuban music is, you would find some of that in the complexity of polyrhythms. And at the same time, I spent quite a bit of time in my younger years working on electronic music, and that influenced my concept of timbre, which is very important for my music as well. And also interested in communication and emotions. So my music tends to be quite expressive. So it's a combination of all of the above and more. So it's about layering or stratify or multi-layer, rhythmic but not groovy, timbre in function of expression, for example.
composer Erin Graham is currently in school. She lives in San Francisco.
I'm a composer, but I also play percussion. I'm also a percussionist. Very process-based. I'm trying to work on unconventional forms of repetition. So like just juxtaposing different kinds of rhythms together in like a process that I kind of call rhythmic scrapbooking and using that to create like unconventional narratives. I guess that's how I would summarize it. I guess I would say that it's angular, personified, and energetic.
And a composer who once studied in San Francisco, Annie Hsieh.
I'm from Australia, but I was born in Taiwan, and I live in Pittsburgh now. I'm a professor at Carnegie Mellon University. And did I say I'm a composer? I am a composer. My current focus in music is to kind of discover what does it mean to write in a post-instrumental way. Kind of like how do you use instruments that we're familiar with in an unconventional way, and that includes building in new instruments and working very closely with musicians to get the sound results that I want. I also work a lot in both acoustic and electroacoustic mediums. So electronic music is also part of my creative output. Immersive, collaborative, and social.
Okay, you've probably got some ideas of what the careers of these composers look like. Watch them bust through every single one of your preconceived notions right after the break. Leave over half the population out of your music programming, and you don't just miss out on the female experience, you miss out on half the world's life experience. And I can prove it, because the misconceptions these women face on a daily basis shows just how much audiences don't know what we don't know.
When I say I'm Cuban, they think I'm going to sound like salsa or something like that, because that's what they know about Cuba. I mean, there is so much complexity in Afro-Cuban music and so much beauty that people are not aware of.
This piece we're hearing by Ileana Velasquez is called Wild Wisteria.
One big one is that writing kind of aleatoric / like generative process music is the same thing as improvisation, which has a very distinct, rich history.
Inti Figes Visueta's piece is called Ocol Tib La.
So I think as a percussionist, I often get a lot of people thinking that I only write music for percussion. And while I really enjoy writing music for percussion, I mean, I also, of course, write for other instruments and ensembles. And sometimes I've also gotten feedback when I've written for other instruments and like with no percussion in the ensemble, oh, you write like a percussionist, it's very rhythmic based, which I guess, I mean, it is because I just said that about my music, but it's not exactly the same way I would use rhythm with approach to percussion. And then also I think people don't realize that percussion is a lot more than rhythm. Like it's also very textural, et cetera, and like timbral.
This piece by Erin Graham is called Increase.
whenever I go abroad and present my music, people will first they look at my name and say, oh, this is a weird, maybe like a mixture, we're not sure where you're coming from, we're not sure where you're from kind of name. And so they're like, oh, well, it looks like an Asian name, so we assume you're an Asian woman writing in this style. And then when they encounter my music, they're like, you don't sound like an Asian woman.
Some clarinet and percussion by Annie Xie. This is Elastic Chirping.
Because I teach at Berkeley, people often assume that I compose jazz or I'm somehow engaged with jazz. And I know about this much about jazz. And you would never call my music jazz. And because I'm Jewish, sometimes people think that I write Jewish music, and I know even less about that. My counterpoint students all think I must compose like Bach. When I meet non-musicians and tell them I'm a composer, they immediately think I'm a singer-songwriter. Again, nothing you would ever want to hear me do. And just a general misunderstanding of what it means to be a composer, even coming from people I know who are educated musicians. So it's definitely multi-layered, I would say.
This piece by Marty Epstein is Komorebi.
Oh, when I was actually in Cuba studying on, I was only like 15 years old, a composition professor told me how music by women sounded. Women music sounded weak, women music sounded this and that, and I was so mad that I determined, yes, I'm going to be a good composer and I'm not going to sound anything like what you say like.
Of all the assumptions being broken here, if you leave this episode believing one thing, let it be this. Women can do anything in music. Remember, Clara Schumann could explode. Jennifer Higdon can break through a wall of sound. Nashville-born Undine Smith Moore will shock you. And Rhiannon Giddens will break your heart.
Take my bones, take my blood, but not my soul. Take my body, you can take my bones, take my blood.
All different, all brilliant. And yet, when a project like this rolls around, there's still accusations of exclusivity, which leaves the women participating with additional emotional labor.
It's like, now I have to explain this to you, in addition to all the other things that we're burdened with, I suppose. So I think finding ways of making that more accessible and like easier to talk about and like having some kinds of answers prepared for when we get that kind of pushback, I think is super, super important.
They're amazing composers and deserve to have the opportunity to have the support and have this opportunity to have light shone on their voices.
I got an email from a conductor recently and he said, we want to commission a young Black woman composer. And I know this is probably an impossibility, but I'm just emailing you to see if you know anyone. And by the way, she has to be good. So like the smoke is coming out of my ears. And thankfully I took about an hour before I responded. And then I said, oh, here's a list of 10 composers whose music I really like, and they're all really, really great. You know, I probably should have said, you never say, oh, they have to be good when you commission anyone else. Like the worry is that, oh, we're just going to choose this person just because of their identity. At our level, at the level that the five of us are at, it's assumed that we're good. Like you get to a certain point, you're good. We're all good.
Before you reach that stage of just judging everybody on the same platform, you need to have the same equal amount of people in the pool.
I mean, honestly, I don't like complaining about it or talking too much, but it's just an everyday experience. So how could anybody dare to say, oh, why is this all females? The other one is gonna be a male composer if my entire life, that's what I've heard.
I don't watch or look at concerts that don't have women or BIPOC on them. You know, I have a limited amount of listening space and that feels like much more like where I want to direct my gaze. So maybe that's where like I direct my ears too.
take those cultural values and those knowledges as like just part of the space, instead of always kind of feeling like you're like pushing against a flow or something.
We do a range of programming, and in the midst of that range of programming, we do highlight male composers, you know, many, many different kinds of composers. So, you know, it's not like our organization is only focusing on the voices of women.
As orchestras and ensembles pay more attention to who is represented in their programming, it's worth noting one entity that has a lot of power in this situation. The audience. That's you. If you want to hear music by women, from composers with different backgrounds, if you want to hear something new, say something. Classically Speaking is a production of Nashville Public Radio. The show is edited by Anita Bug and engineered by Carl Peterson. I'm Colleen Phelps. Music you heard in this episode is by Marty Epstein, Aaron Graham, Annie Xie, Ileana Velasquez, and Inti Figuisvisueta. Also, a little Clara Schumann, Undine Smith-Moore, Jennifer Higdon, Rhiannon Giddens, and Christina Spinet. Find a playlist of music by all these composers and music from multiple episodes on our Spotify. It's also another place where you can access your backstage pass to classical music, classically speaking.